Hello and welcome to SearchSecurity.com Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, August 30th, 2006. I'm Eric Parizo. This week, our monthly roundtable discussion with IT security professionals on this month's top news stories. And a 21-year-old pays the price for infecting 50,000 computers. But first, our top story. Microsoft is dealing with claims of yet another security flaw in its Internet Explorer browser that attackers could exploit to launch malicious code or cause a denial of service. The flaw was outlined in an advisory Monday from the XSEC Vulnerability Research Organization. The problem is caused by the way IE tries to instantiate certain COM objects' ActiveX controls. Attackers can allegedly exploit the flaw by constructing a malicious web page and tricking a user into visiting it. Symantec says proof of concept code demonstrating how to exploit the flaw is available. XSEC says in its advisory that the vulnerability affects Windows 2000, Windows XP, and Windows 2003. Microsoft is investigating the flaw and may release a new security advisory or a patch if it is warranted. Also in the news, AT&T is informing customers about a data breach affecting as many as 19,000 people. The incident happened over the weekend. AT&T's chief privacy officer says digital miscreants hacked into one of its computer systems and gained access to credit card information and other personal data. The security breach primarily affects customers who used AT&T's online store to buy DSL equipment. AT&T is notifying customers of the breach by phone, email, and traditional mail, and has offered to pay for credit card monitoring services for those affected. According to a list maintained by the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, close to 91 million records containing sensitive personal information have been confirmed stolen or exposed as of August 26th. And now for this week's Security Spotlight. August was a busy month for the InfoSec community. It started with a bang thanks to the annual Black Hat Hacker Conference, followed by the release of nearly two dozen Microsoft flaws, and then just last week, IBM's acquisition of Internet Security Systems. Joining me to discuss the implications of these events are Paul Asadorian, lead IT security engineer for a university in southern New England and host of Paul.com Security Weekly, a security hacking podcast. Jessica Linverzi, IT security manager with ESL Federal Credit Union in Rochester, New York. And Frank Koniski, an information technical security specialist who works with the federal government. Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, everyone.
Thank you.
Let's start with Black Hat. One of the big events there this year was a demonstration by Dave Mayner and Johnny Cash Elsh on how to hack virtually any laptop by targeting its wireless card. It, of course, received a lot of attention in the media, so my first question to you folks is, does this revelation make you any more leery of wireless connectivity for end users?
Well, I think certainly, you know, for myself, it doesn't come as any surprise. I know a few researchers doing work in this field, specifically looking at wireless drivers, and you know exactly what Don and David said in their presentation at Black Hat was that there's a lot of bugs in there because programmers have a very small space to work in, and also the wireless card manufacturers want to be first to market with the latest technology. So there's a lot of pressure to put code out very quickly, and that's a really bad combination. It also, leads to bugs, which leads to vulnerabilities. So, it certainly was of no surprise. What was a surprise to me is how this whole situation is being handled. I think it was last Friday that stories started to break about how the wireless, Mac hack was a fake, and so on and so forth, and. You know, I don't think we have all the facts to really come out and say that. What we do know is that they did exploit a driver on a third-party wireless card. You know, hopefully we'll get more information. They were able to exploit some of the products and drivers from Apple. Gives me an indication that, it's not a fake, that, maybe they could be coming under pressure from Apple not to release that. And in fact, they did say that they used a third-party card to appease Apple. So if they did that, then one can assume that they do have exploits or found at least vulnerabilities with Apple products. So,
Paul, tell me more about that, because I think that was a sticking point for some people. Do you think it was an unfair swipe at Apple? I know in the demonstration, Maynard used a Dell laptop to hack into the MacBook, but later it was revealed that the wireless device driver in the MacBook was from a third-party vendor. Do you think that was okay, or was it an unfair thing to do at Apple's expense?
No, I don't think it was a direct attack on Apple. I mean, if anyone who knows Jonathan Alex, he's like the biggest fan of Macs and Apple. I think there's some disappointment on his end with the way that it was handled, because they did, I think, focus on the third-party driver to kind of take some of the focus away from Apple, and kind of as a favor to Apple to say, you know, we're not going to attack the built-in driver to give them time to patch the vulnerability or whatever the case may be. Obviously, if they did that at Apple's request, then, you know, there's potentially a problem there. But I think that the holy wars of operating system kind of got in the way of this whole thing. So my recommendation is for everyone who uses a wireless card, whether you have a Mac or a PC, or you're running Linux, you know, if you're not using a wireless card, you need to keep it disabled and keep tabs on what driver you have and when new releases are going to be coming out.
Oh, wouldn't it be fair, though, to allow... This is Frank, by the way. Frank, wouldn't it be fair, though, to post the which cards are vulnerable? I mean, since it wasn't on board, you know, which ones are vulnerable and which ones you guys found that wasn't vulnerable?
Yeah, and that, you know, that leads into a whole discussion about full disclosure, and certainly I'm an advocate for full disclosure. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of things that get in the way of full disclosure, and there's a lot more going on there, you know. You know, I think some companies don't want that information released, and that's like a double-edged sword. You know, if you keep it to yourself, well then, you know, everyone else is in the dark, and like you said, we don't know exactly what's vulnerable. So,
and as a security professional, I mean, this just brings out the point that wireless cards are introduced as an attack vector, regardless of who it is and what the vendor is. It's something we need to look at.
Jessica, on that point, I'm curious to know what your wireless policy is, since it seems like this issue and a lot of other issues are basically at the most risk when users are using the public wireless hotspots. So what are your thoughts as far as an organization when it comes to hotspot use? Do you recommend that users use them with care or with a VPN only, or do you discourage hotspot use in general?
I discourage it in general. I'm very fortunate being with a bank. I've taken the easy way out and just not allowed wireless at all. But people that do need to use it just need to use it with care and use VPN and be very careful about what they're doing.
Yeah, I think user awareness training is very important in that area as well.
Let's talk about Microsoft now. I'm sure at least a couple of you have been busy deploying this month's monster patch load across your environments. The Windows Server Service flaw, also known as MS06040, attracted the most attention at first, with everyone from the Department of Homeland Security to SANS eagerly jumping in to say how dangerous this flaw was. I'm curious, were any of you generally worried about this flaw, or did you feel like the threat was just overhyped?
My opinion is that it was a little bit overhyped. I mean, these updates come out every month, and they're not a surprise. And obviously, you know, the strength of the vulnerability is unknown, but it's become standard operating procedures for us. It's not extra work. It's just something that we know that we have to do.
Generally, organizations take anywhere from a few days to several weeks to test and then implement Microsoft's monthly patches. Did the urgency that seemed to accompany this patch cause any of you to speed up your process this time around?
Our process is very streamlined, so we do it as soon as we can. So we don't need to speed it up. We always treat it with extra care and get it in as soon as possible.
Yeah, we didn't give any special attention to this particular vulnerability. Of course, it happened in the summer when none of our students were here, so it was, you know, there's 5,000 less people here on our campus using our network, so it,
Now, the August cumulative Internet Explorer update had to be re-released last week because the original fix was causing system crashes and actually opened up a new security hole. Now, Microsoft was criticized by some security experts for not acting quickly enough, but do you think Microsoft dealt with the patch problems properly? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I certainly think that they did. You know, I mean, it's a monumental task to get out a patch for something like Internet Explorer or any of the Microsoft products. So to go back in and then re-release a patch and retest it, you know, I think they acted responsibly. You know, no one's perfect. People make mistakes. Patches are going to cause problems. You know, in the worst case, they're going to open up new vulnerabilities. But I think they did a good job of getting that patch out there and re-release. Of course, I say that, but I use Firefox. So.
I was going to say the same thing. We don't use, we minimize our use of anything dealing with Windows products.
Is that, do you think, pretty much what it's come down to these days? Most organizations using Firefox and non-Windows products whenever they can to mitigate all these various patches and repatch issues?
Yes. In our case, that's what it is here. We don't, we try to avoid the problems. And in the past, as everybody knows, Internet Explorer has always had issues. Going back to one thing that Paul mentioned is the fact that a lot of these people are releasing to push out production. A lot of people are pushing out code that may not have been reviewed properly. And in the case of this particular patch, I mean, that's a prime example that people are trying to stomp out, you know, the smallest area of the fire while the biggest fire is going on. I really don't think this particular issue, though, had a great effect on businesses who are, you know, practice due diligence and keep their systems up to date. You know, I think this is probably going to affect those people that are on the perimeter that don't patch on a regular basis, that turn off their, you know, automatic patching and stuff on their small computers at home, bring back any of the problems into the business.
Our last topic this week is a pretty big acquisition. IBM announced last week that it was acquiring ISS for $1.3 billion. Some analysts said acquisitions like this show that the big guys in the industry are finally understanding that security is a must-have, and they're trying to cater to IT pros who want security baked into their infrastructure offerings. Do any of you see a time when your standalone products and tools, security products and tools, are replaced by integrated security features in the major vendors' platforms?
In my case, this is Frank. In my case, no. There's always going to be there's always going to be a Johnny Cash out there who's going to develop something new that's going to be used by security professionals to help lock down their systems, whether it be for the wireless or for the network. Just having one area out there, one application, I don't think it's going to cover it.
Yeah, there's never been the silver bullet. You always need multiple layers of defense, and I think that translates into having multiple products. Now, certainly, you don't want too many products, and you do have to do some kind of consolidation, but, you know, it's always a multi-layered approach, a multi-vendor approach to get the best protection.
It is, but what a success to the industry that these large companies are starting to finally consider building security in.
To play devil's advocate, though, with you a little bit, a lot of people have come out and said that if this trend continues, it's going to be tough for a lot of the independent mid-major security vendors to survive. So I'm wondering if you think that's in any way true. Will it be tough for a lot of these important independent vendors to stand on their own when they're going to be the big boys in the industry, you know, ready to scoop them up?
I don't think so. I think the nature of what they're offering is going to shift a little bit as that happens, but I think that there's always going to be that need.
I think it's going to depend on the vendor, you know, and what space that they're in. I think some of the smaller vendors in certain spaces may not be able to compete, but I think it might help weed out some areas where there needs to be better competition to kind of bring up everyone's game in that particular area. You know, there's certainly areas now, like web application testing suites where there's a lot of products out there and it has yet to kind of weed itself out and boil down to a kind of a best of breed, three or four different vendors that are providing a really good product.
Anything to add, Frank?
Well, my feeling was I just feel like IBM making this purchase is just going to suit IBM type products, and I mean I'm sure you can use it across the board, but it's still going to be limiting. I don't see them offering something like ISS on a full blown scale. I feel like it will be limiting to either the particular device or devices that are within that purchase order or whatever.
I don't know if any of you have actually been through a situation where you've worked with a vendor who was then acquired by another vendor, but I'm just curious if you were in a situation where you were an ISS customer, would you feel more or less confident about ISS after an acquisition like this?
I always get nervous when there's large mergers like that because you never know what's going to fall through. Something always does.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of it in my environment, especially with Cisco purchasing a good number of vendors that we've either been looking at or had implemented. And, you know, for the most part, they've done a good job, and it depends on how IBM is gonna handle it. You know, if they, sometimes it makes sense to keep them separate. Sometimes it makes more sense to fold them into your existing product line as close as possible or somewhere in between. So, I mean, it depends. I'm not an ISS customer, so I'm not that familiar with all their products, and I don't use a lot of IBM products and services either. But you know, certainly someone who's either an ISS customer or an IBM customer is gonna, you know, they're gonna experience where IBM's gonna take them, you know, and they may make the right decision or the wrong decision. But you know, it depends on a lot of factors.
All right. Again, Paul Azadourian, Frank Kaniski, and Jessica Lynn Verzi. Thank you all for joining us this week on Security Wire Weekly. Finally this week, a man who admitted infecting 50,000 computers at U.S. military bases, schools, and a Seattle hospital is heading to prison for the next 3 years. 21-year-old Christopher Maxwell of Vacaville, California, was found guilty of launching a series of attacks in January 2005. In addition to jail time, he must pay a fine of $250,000. Maxwell's attack reportedly left Northwest Hospital and Medical Center in North Seattle reeling. The attack is said to have shut down computers in the facility's intensive care unit and prevented doctors' pagers from working properly. Maxwell also caused more than $135,000 worth of damage by infecting Department of Defense computers as well as those belonging to the hospital. The whole incident started when he and two juveniles unleashed malware designed to install adware on affected PCs. The three are said to have been paid more than $100,000 through the result of advertising commission revenue. Furthermore, the Colton School District in Southern California estimated that it cost up to $75,000 to repair its computers after an attack. And that is Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest corporate security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. And don't forget that you can find more of our podcasts at searchsecurity.com/podcast. As always, we thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.